friends, is whether or not we are black or white or rich or poor or Christian or gay or straight or trans, that we certainly all have our issues. And I mean, the reality is if we're looking, for example, at depression statistics in this country, do you realize that there are 16 million adults in the United States, which translates into 1 in 5 Americans who are suffering from clinical depression? And if you're looking at the whole area of anxiety disorders, we're looking at 40 million adults are also suffering from a variety of different anxiety kinds of issues. So the real question is whether or not we're talking about depression or relationships or substance abuse or early child sexual abuse or sexuality. What do we need to do if we find that we're on a merry-go-round ride or a roller coaster ride? And I'm not talking about fun rides. What do we do if we cannot seem to find a way to get ourselves on a really, really good path? And you know, today, my friends, is the 285th Ask Beatty show here on the Progressive Radio Network. And almost 200,000 downloads, on the Progressive Radio Network archives. And I oftentimes wonder, because of course I don't get an opportunity to meet most of you. Yes, you text and you email, and I really appreciate all of that. And of course, you can also call me on the show. The number is 888-874-4888. And I really oftentimes wonder what the impact of all of this is on your lives. Because this is exactly the reason why I love to do the show, because it's all about my mantra in my clinical practice here in New York City and in East Hampton, is acknowledge and address and resolve as best as we can the issues that are getting in the way of our lives and our relationships. You know, last week, for those of you who listened to the show, I was looking at some of these suicide statistics. Do you realize that suicide attempts by young people have quadrupled over the past 6 years? And since 2011, there's been a 40% increase nationally by self-poisoning by young people. What is that all about? You know, whether or not it's shaming, or whether or not, you know, people these days are sleeping with their phones and with their computers, and we're wondering who is following us and how many likes and how many friends. And I think that the impact, particularly on young people, and I think sometimes on older people as well, you know, can really, really have a very, very negative impact on our lives. And the other thing, of course, that I like to remind you of every single week is that, look, we all have old issues, unfinished business, or what I call skeletons in the closet. And we can't change what happened even 30 seconds ago. But what I have found over the past 35 years as a psychotherapist, that there really is a way to emotionally work through what did and did not happen, beginning in our own family of origins, including dealing emotionally with the abuse, the sexual assault, the verbal, the physical, or the emotional abuse. And this is not going to happen just by having a cognitive behavioral therapy approach. There's a lot of merit in a variety of different kinds of approaches that therapists use in therapy, but I have yet to find a way of being able to help people really move forward unless they have been able to deal as best as one can with their old issues. And that's something, you know, we could maybe talk about sometime. And even though we can't change our history, these things need to be sorted through. Otherwise, what I have found with patients is that people continue to have one foot in the past and one foot in the present, and it does not need to be like that for you. And it is not about forgetting, and it is not necessarily at all about forgiving, but this process I have found to be extremely, extremely helpful for people. And I just want to remind you of some of the tips that we can all incorporate into our lives on a daily basis. Because, you know, after every single session that I have with patients, I want to remind them. I want them to be mindful as they navigate their days and as they navigate their relationships that they are doing things that are ultimately in their best interest. And I think for a lot of us, it can become very confusing. Is this good for me? Is this not good for me? So, for example, when it comes to diet, we all know because we listen to Dr. Gary Null every single day. We know about the importance of plant-based diets, the fruits, the vegetables, the grains, the fish, the nuts, really important. And we can make a lot of excuses why we can't do this. But again, if you're looking at evidence-based research, this is research that has found that people live the longest and are the healthiest. So you have to take a look in this new 2020 year and ask yourself, am I doing what is best for me in terms of diet and nutrition? And of course, again, what does the research tell us about exercise? Well, it tells us a lot of things. It is a great antidepressant. It is a great anti-anxiety. Over and above, we feel better, we look better. So exercise, incorporating exercise and weight training and yoga and meditation, you know, whatever seems to be your thing, really, really can make a difference in your life. And what about toxins? You know, when we talk about toxins, typically, especially with climate change, you know, we talk about environmental toxins. When I talk about toxins, I talk about toxic people. And if you've been listening to the Ask Beauty Show, of course, my tolerance for toxic people happens to be zero. So it's really important that you take a look at the people in your life and you make sure that you have supportive, loving people who respect you. And that is not to suggest at all. I mean, we all have ups and downs in our relationships, but it's about really getting the tools to be able, when things are starting to get off track, to know what it is that you need to do in terms of healthy emotional communication and problem solving. And if that doesn't work, then you have to seriously think about eliminating toxins, chemical toxins, as well as toxic people, and that sometimes means your friends and family. You know, other things that really help, you know, sometimes, you know, I'll wake up, and even before a show, there may be a lot of other things going on, a patient crisis or some other thing happening in my life. And I find that just sitting down and doing some positive visualization and also dancing and listening to music, and for me, it's Broadway music, it can really make all the difference in the world. So again, it's about figuring out for all of us, what are the things that we need to do that are really in our best interest? And of course, eliminating the sugars, the sodas, the alcohol, the nicotine. And also, and I was saying to somebody just before the show, I mean, people these days are sleeping with their phones and their computers. Not a good thing. Not a good thing for your relationship. Not a good thing for your sleep. So please, we all need, and I say this to myself as well, and I say this to Jim as well, we need to find ways to really minimize the social media and the cell phones and the computers and not get so hung up on how many likes and how many followers that we have. It can get very, 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 very tedious. But before I introduce my guests, I would be remiss if we did not commemorate today. After all, today is Martin Luther King's birthday. It's an important day, my friends. And there was a wonderful, wonderful piece in the New York Times yesterday written by Michelle Alexander. And we all know who Michelle Alexander is. She is the one who wrote the New York Times best-selling book, The New Jim Crow. And I loved a couple of sentences. Of course, the whole article really needs to be written. It was in the opinion column yesterday. And this is what Michelle Alexander has to say. She says, from racism, poverty, income inequality, mass incarceration to mass deportation, our nation remains in deep denial about these issues. And I think today, particularly, and of course, not just today, is an important day for us to take this all in and realize that in this country, racism is still rampant, as is poverty, as is income inequality and mass incarceration. And like with emotional and psychological and psychiatric issues, then we have to ask ourselves a really, really important question. First of all, do you care? Some people, really, if they're honest with themselves, they don't care at all. And what do we need to do? Well, we need to try to educate people and give them the kinds of information that maybe we will be able to touch their heart in some kind of a fashion. And if you do care about these issues, especially since we are going to be soon in the midst of the election season, you have to ask yourself, so, you know, what are you going to do? What will you do? You say that you care. What will you do? And, of course, it is so important. It is just so important to remember to vote. And as Dr. William Barber reminds us, he reminds us constantly, and this is something that is really, I think, important, is that it is not about the right and it is not about the left. So it doesn't matter. He's not talking about whether or not you're a Democrat or an independent or a Republican. He is talking about what is right, what is ethically and morally right. And this is where we have to just dig into our own hearts and ask ourselves, are we living the kind of life for ourselves, in our relationships, in our communities, in our societies, that is a caring, loving life? I mean, how else are we able to create any significant kind of changes in our society if we really don't care? So again, I don't know how you're going to be commemorating Martin Luther King's birthday, but I hope that in some small way, you will be able to take some of this really in. Well, moving away from Martin Luther King's birthday, I have absolutely two terrific guests. And the first guest I actually found on the computer. I was just looking at relationship education, because you hear me talking about my book and relationship education every single week. And Dr. Joanne Davila, PhD, and Casey Lashman wrote a terrific book, which I definitely recommend that you all read, and I read it over the weekend, The Thinking Girl's Guide to the Right Guy, How Knowing Yourself, Isn't That the Truth, Can Help You Navigate Dating, Hookups, and Love. So, Dr. Joanne Davila, welcome to the Ask Beattie Show.
Thank you so much, Beattie. I'm really thrilled to be here.
Well, I'm really thrilled to be meeting you here in person, and we're going to get Casey on the phone in a couple of minutes. But Dr. Davila is a professor of psychology at Stony Brook University, which is why it was so great you were able to take the train in. She is a clinical psychologist in private practice and an internationally known expert on young women's romantic relationships, and she lives in Stony Brook, New York, with her partner. And Casey, are you on the phone right now?
I am. Hi, Beatty.
Hi. So nice to finally connect with you. How are you today in beautiful Vancouver, a fellow Canadian? I love it.
Well, I'm great. It's not that beautiful today.
It's not that beautiful. Well, let me just let people know that you are an experienced speaker, having given numerous talks and educational workshops at conferences, public libraries, and schools for school counselors, parents, and teens to understand how to detangle what makes for a healthy relationship based on science. And I was asking Dr. Davila how the two of you connected, and she told me a really interesting story about how you actually found her on the computer.
Yes. Do you want me to
sure.
mention a little story briefly?
So what made you decide to research relationships, and how did you and why did you want to connect with Dr. Davila?
Well, my daughter was a teen and was involved in an unhealthy relationship, and that really troubled me. And so I looked around for any kind of resources I could find, specifically science, and that's when I stumbled on Joanne eventually, and we started working together, and it's just such a rewarding experience to be able to help people with the skills.
Absolutely. And I really, really did love the book. And I certainly recommend everybody to read it. So what prompted Dr. Davila you to do the research? Because this is not just your thoughts and Casey's thoughts on relationships. I mean, this is real evidence-based research.
Well, there's really two things that sort of got me started on this line of research. And one is that when I was in graduate school, people had this idea that relationships kind of began when you got married, that you get married and then your relationship starts and then you need to learn what to do.
Ah.
And that made no sense to me. And
right.
So I really started thinking about younger people and about the idea that we learn things earlier on, whether we know it or not, that we bring to our relationships. And if we could help younger people figure out how to best have skills so that they could start from an earlier age, at an earlier point in time, having better relationships, then they'd get better down the road. So that was a really important piece for me.
So that was the impetus.
Yes.
For your research. So what were, Dr. Davila, some of the findings that you discovered and that you and Casey were then able to write about?
Yeah. So the first thing that we had to do in the research was think about how we're going to define what it means for people to be good at relationships, what we call relationship competence.
Right.
And so that was the first thing we did. My lab and I, we needed to design a way to understand what competence was going to, what was that made up of.
Mm-hmm.
So we did a real thorough review of the literature, and we started to hypothesize that competence is made up of three skills: insight, meaning like having awareness and knowing yourself and things like that. Mutuality, meaning that you can take other people's perspectives and care about what other people think. And then emotion regulation, meaning that you could manage your feelings in response to relationships. So we started there to see if this could really help us understand what competence is. And it does. It can.
Well, I think that's the whole thing, is that, for me and what I found in my own research and book, For Better, For Worse, Forever, Discover the Path to Lasting Love, is that if each of us is not in a good place emotionally, psychologically, psychiatrically, and that we work through our issues, the skeletons in the closet and the unfinished business, and that we have some real insight, as you and Casey have written about, we're in no position at all to ever be able to have a successful relationship with anybody. I mean, and Casey, for you, I mean, you joined Dr. Davila in this research. Was that your sense as well when you started this project with her?
Oh, absolutely, because, I think skills, Joanne mentioned the skills, but there's also needs, right? And we really need the skills to meet our needs. We need to understand our preferences. I mean, without that, we can't even use our needs to make relationship decisions.
Exactly.
So that was, even to problem solve, I mean, any situation we're going through in a relationship, we really needed to understand how to use those skills to meet our needs and then decide what it is we even wanted, which helps us set up standards, you know, for what our needs are, and then we can make relationship decisions based on those standards.
Exactly. So, in fact, you know, in my last chapter of my own book, after people go through the whole process, my 10-step formula that teaches people how to assess who's right for you and who's wrong for you before committing, they're the same. It was so interesting. It was basically the same questions. What I want and need in a relationship, what I don't want and need in a relationship, then describe the reality of my relationship, and then looking at, you know, what things are compromisable and what things are absolutely under no circumstances compromisable at all. So, you know, you're both saying that having this insight and having the knowledge to at least to be able to understand what is and what is not a healthy relationship, it puts you on a good path. And if you don't have this, it's not possible. It's not possible to find and maintain a healthy relationship. So what was interesting, you know, when I was reading the book is that, you know, even though I'm just, you know, met Dr. Davila, just talking with you for the first time, how interesting that we're on exactly the same, we're exactly in the same place. Which is a good thing, right?
Absolutely. Really good thing.
Yeah.
So everyone needs to know how to build healthy relationships nowadays, especially because with all, you know, everyone's calling whatever they buzzword they want to use, modern dating, et cetera. It's that, you know, the social norms are evolving, and this is creating lots of complex problems for young people.
And for older people too. I mean, every single week here on the Ask Beattie Show, I cite these very depressing statistics, which I know that you and Dr. Davila are very familiar with. I mean, the divorce rate for first marriages is 48%. And then I will ask people, or I'll ask an audience, so what do you think the divorce rate for second marriages is? And these people who've read, they realize it's 67%. And then I'll say, well, what do you think the statistics are for third marriages? And, of course, the divorce statistics are 74%. So, I mean, there's a real problem. And, you know, we were talking before the show, Casey, that with all the relationship books and all the research and all the talks and all the shows on relationships, we're missing the boat.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you can't, if you don't know what your idea of a good relationship is, you can't find it. And if you don't know what you need in a partner in a relationship, you can't even find your right person, you know?
Exactly. I know that you both have defined a few traits, and I think it is so well worth repeating. Specific traits that need and define healthy relationships. Dr. Davila, what are some of those things that people need to hear about?
Yeah, these are the things that we consider the needs.
Yes.
And they really are the things that we think are kind of at the core of all relationships. So safety is probably one of the most important ones. And we mean that in all sorts of ways.
Right.
Feeling emotionally safe with someone, feeling physically safe with someone. That's a key one. Support is another key one, that you need to be with someone who has your best interests at heart and is there for you when you need. Of course, things like being, you know, attracted to the person and feeling desirous of them. Those are all really important as well. But some of these more deeper emotional ones are just critical.
Mm-hmm. And if you're looking at, Casey, if you're looking at some of the characteristics of unhealthy relationships, other than obviously, you know, violent relationships, what are some of the other things that people really need to hear and really need to take in?
Well, you know, going back to what Joanne was saying, if you're not paying attention to your partner, right, which is an abstract idea, but you can actually do it meeting your needs using the skill of insight, like caring about what they're saying, listening to understand them, and considering their needs in your decisions. If you're not actually even meeting those needs for them, you can't even, that's a mutuality mistake. You can't even negotiate, right? Because you can't see their perspective. So using the skills to meet the needs are really important to do so many things, like all of the work in a healthy relationship. For example, what I just mentioned, that's how you can build intimacy, right?
Right.
I mean, without that, if you're not doing the work by voicing your needs, right? And when you understand what those needs are, you can voice them. It gives you the ability to wait, to watch for them, to see if they're being responsive. And that's a little seed of intimacy. So by using the skills to meet your needs, you actually are creating the things that we all want in a healthy relationship, like intimacy, respect, security, all of those things.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you, how much, I use the term luck, but it's obviously more than luck. How successful are you in Vancouver in being able to try to find different venues to implement this really important program and book that you and Dr. Davila have written? The schools responsive? Are the colleges responsive? Are women's organizations responsive to this?
I actually am just writing myself to go out into the community to do that. Right now, I do a lot of one-on-one work with young people and sometimes parents and young people, and I'm moving forward now that me and Joanne have just finished another book, which is another application of, you know, the skills and the needs, because for young people, they're very scenario based. I mean, it helps them to see things right within their popular culture and context.
Yes.
So now I'm just about to move forward. And I've made some initial calls and people are really welcoming. I mean, people really want to use science for healthy, like they eat healthy. I mean, they do so many things healthy. They don't like feeling like not good and not comfortable inside themselves in relationships. So I feel people are more open, especially now with everyone moving towards authenticity in
right.
all areas of their life.
Well, hopefully that's certainly going to be the experience. And what about you, Dr. Davila, in your community at Stony Brook? The counseling department, other psychologists, are they receptive and responsive to having you give talks and workshops and lectures and really bringing the student body in to this incredibly important book and research?
Yeah, absolutely. I found people have been really responsive and really interested. Whenever I talk with people about this, they love the ideas and they relate to it really easily and quickly because everyone can relate to relationships. At a larger level, I think that's where the problem lies, mm-hmm. getting these ideas out there at the, you know, level of policy, for example, is much, much harder to do, unfortunately.
No, it certainly is. You know, Casey, I'm not sure whether or not you were aware, but when I lived in Montreal, I was one of three people who ran the entire school social services program for Greater Montreal. Now, that was a number of years ago. But I was, you know, telling Dr. Davila how simple it was. I mean, I was responsible for hundreds of schools, and I had a large staff, and I remember going to my the person who was with the Ministry of Social Affairs and saying, listen, I want to do some relationship education beginning in the first grade level. And she said, well, sure. Why don't you just do it? I mean, it wasn't a question of money and we didn't have to do any, you know, in-depth research. And we had a reasonable outline, you know, for the kids. It was simple. And yet what I have been finding is that it is, you know, as Dr. Davila was saying, much more challenging to have administrations really not only say we love your work, but to find the resources and even the time in the rooms, believe it or not, to be able to present the program. So it's that's a challenge.
It's a real challenge. Yeah, it's a real challenge. If it's easier to bring it to small venues, like you say, but
yes.
To get, for example, a university or a high school to adopt this, extremely difficult, which is sad because everybody cares about relationships at some level.
Well, I think that everybody cares, but, you know, one wonders, and I certainly wonder whether or not the decision makers really do care. And, you know, Casey, I don't know whether I had mentioned to you, but when I lived in Sarasota, Governor Bush, and it's interesting why, since I'm hardly a Republican, his daughter was having some problems. I was with ABC at television at the time. So he appointed me to the Florida State Commission on Marriage for the sole purpose of having my program, based on the research and book, implemented into high schools and colleges and universities in the state of Florida. So I was Commissioner Beattie Cohen for 2 years, and I met with every single person who was a major decision maker in the state of Florida. And I had a very,
fabulous.
It was a very eye-opening experience. I would go to meetings all over the state, and I would wonder, is there something wrong with me? Because I don't think that anything is really happening. And to make a long story short, after 2 years, it was very clear to me that nobody cared at all. Not the domestic violence people, not the education people, not the social services people. The guidance counselors cared. The teachers cared.
Totally.
And of course, they were the people that had no power at all. No power, no money. And that was that. And I'm not sure whether I've ever publicly said this, but I think I was the first commissioner in the state of Florida who was not reinstated for a second term. I made a lot of fuss. I wasted a lot of time, and I naively thought that we were there to actually do something. But I learned something about politics.
Disappointing.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly. And I'm hoping that your experience in Vancouver is going to be a lot better than mine was in the state of Florida. But I want to ask you both more about, the skill-based model of relationship functioning, the insight, the mutuality, the emotional regulation. When you're with students, how do you help them to understand the concepts in a way that they are able to really personalize it for themselves so that it doesn't sound just theoretical and conceptual? How do you do this?
So we've developed a workshop now for college students where we have a series of modules. And in those modules, we design them to target specific issues that are really relevant to them. So, for example, you know, how do you manage conflict in a relationship?
Uh-huh.
Or how do you find somebody? And how do you think through whether somebody's going to be right for you? And things like that, the decisions that they're typically making in college. And so we use a lot of personal examples or a lot of, you know, descriptive examples, and we try to bring it right to their life and show them how each of the skills really maps on to the things that they need to do.
Uh-huh.
And we ask them to do a lot of reflection
right.
about their own lives as well so that they can start to immediately apply the skills to their life.
Mm-hmm. And if you're talking about... I'm sorry, go ahead, Casey.
No, go ahead. No, finish your thought.
Now, I was just going to ask if you're, and if you're looking at the skill, the concept of mutuality, where both people, you know, have to understand that both people have needs, and both people, as you so beautifully put it, both people have needs that matter.
Right. Exactly. So we do some perspective-taking exercises, and I've done this differently in different ways, but one of the most successful ones, I've had people do some role plays where they actually have to enact both sides of a conflict and take both perspectives, which really gets people to think through, oh, wow, someone else thinks differently than me, and if I thought that way, I'd have the same feelings. So we literally make them get in the other person's position, and it brings it home for them.
I bet it does. What were you going to say, Casey?
A couple things. One, to just add on what Joanne said. So when the idea of mutuality, I think, to further that point, is when many people like someone and they're trying to get noticed, etc., their whole goal is to get that partner to like them back. That's the only thing they want. And when you tell them that that's not healthy because that's not mutual, you both have needs, right? You have yours, voice them, give them the opportunity to meet them. They really start to respect mutuality, and they want that. Like, they want to learn it. Like, they want to understand that because it makes life easier for them. It makes it less complicated in their mind. And, you know, there was a study, I think it was Harvard Making Care Common project that talked about how young people in high school as well as college age are really can get really consumed by relationships and, you know, meeting their own no and like needs, like their own needs, can really suffer. And when mutuality is about balance, and when you explain that to them, they want to learn it. It's something that excites them to be able to think about balancing their needs.
You know, it's interesting. I saw a patient yesterday who's in a pretty dysfunctional relationship, you know, and I remind listeners all the time, in the most horrible of relationships, 80% of the time, it's typically pretty okay. It's that horrible 20% of the time, whether or not you're talking about a lot of invalidation or abuse of various different kinds. And she was saying to me yesterday, she says, you know, and she's a brilliant, brilliant woman. She's a journalist. She's written books. She's written articles. She can spin all kinds of information around all of us. And yet she says, you know, I still hear my parents' voice. Your needs don't matter. So obviously this is, you know, one of the reasons why she is in therapy with me. And I think a lot of people get confused, especially if you're so needy and lonely and wanting, and the relationship is your whole, you know, raison d'etre for being. You are oftentimes, if you haven't worked through your own, in quotes, unfinished business and skeletons in the closet, it's very easy for people to put their own needs on the back burner.
Yeah.
And suffer tremendously.
Well, especially when you say, I read something that you wrote, which I so agreed with, popular culture,
yes,
right, teaches them. Whereas, to your point of what you just said, mutuality, to balance their needs and sets of needs, like I know and like myself, right? That, and then I know and like my partner and expect their partner to know and like them, meet their needs. What that does is takes the abstractive idea, like I've got to be my own, you know, my own person, and you have to continue to meet your own I know and like myself needs while you're in a relationship, right?
Absolutely.
So it's the practical part. And so the mine and Joanne's needs model, what it does is it really helps you shift between perspectives,
right,
which is so important. And it helps you recognize that you are building your own life. You are still supporting yourself. You are still trying to understand yourself. Like, you are still doing all of those things. You are complete and whole person. And mutuality, balancing your relationship needs.
Exactly. And hopefully you are with a partner who gets it on that level, so that, you know, there are me concerns and me issues and we concerns and we issues. And hopefully you both understand that both are really, really important. I remember with my own daughter, Jordana, when she was a little girl, of course, she, you know, has been listening to me on the radio and hearing me talk about this forever. But I remember I wanted to instill in her the fact that the relationship needed to be the icing on the cake, and that we needed to be the cake. We needed to be the foundation. We needed to be solid. We needed to know what we wanted and needed and didn't want and didn't need. And, you know, to then be able to accommodate the kind of mutuality, you know, that the two of you have talked about and that you have written about. And I think that, I think it's happening more with women today. Do you agree?
I do agree. Uh-huh. I do agree. I think women are much more empowered in general and are much more aware of how important this is. And yet, when we teach it to people, it really is one of the things that just captures them, and just they, you know, you can see that shift in, oh my goodness, like, I really do need to take care of myself first. So, yeah, I think they're better at it. And I think we as a culture are supporting that at least somewhat more.
Do you find that as well, Casey, that in Vancouver that you're also experiencing women to be just more, that we've come into our own and that we've given ourselves permission that it's really okay?
I do believe that, although I'm still looking at culture. Like, if you, Selena Gomez.
Right.
Big popular song, Lose You to Love Me lyrics.
Mm-hmm.
That, if you read the lyrics and everybody's singing it, and I love her as a human being, as messaging, but that is, if you walk through the lyrics, that is a can I be who you want? Mutuality mistake.
Uh-huh.
Because what's happening is you don't need to lose someone to love yourself or lose someone to find yourself, because you're always meeting your own no one like needs in a relationship.
Mm-hmm.
So I also find that with the evolving social norms, while women are becoming very self-aware, they need this what makes for a healthy relationship education even more, because they're adopting male stereotypes like bold, right? Or keeping my options open, etc., when they're not really sure that's who they are,
mm-hmm.
right? There's a tension between authentic. So they need to really understand who they are, what their traits are, why they're behaving, how they get their needs met, to even understand how to make relationship decisions good for them. But I mean, I'm really positive about the culture. I just think even now more than ever, they really need, you know, the skills, insight, mutuality, emotion regulation.
You know, so what? I totally agree. I totally agree with both of you. You know, I'm thinking of a different demographic now, not the kids in college, but women who are 50 and over. And I had a patient last week who said to me, you know, Beatty, it's hard to stay, but it's also really hard to leave. I don't want to be alone. And this is somebody who was, in quotes, successful and smart, and she has a career. And this is why I think it is so important that women have strong, supportive networks of other women or men, so that we don't just feel that we need to stay in these dysfunctional relationships just because we are afraid to be alone. And I hear this a lot with older women that, you know, even yesterday, somebody said to me, well, it's better that he doesn't even really speak to me for most of the day. It's better to be with him lying around than being in my apartment here in New York City by myself.
Yeah.
So there's
I hear that too. Actually.
You do hear, yes.
I do with my with my clients as well. And I mean, there are different decisions to be made at different stages in life. That's one of the reasons we're trying to reach younger people so that they're not going to find themselves in that kind of situation. But there also are some really realistic things that people have to deal with. So, you know, if we were to adapt the workshop, for example, for women or anyone sort of in a different demographic, those are exactly the kinds of things we'd want to address. Like, how can you do that skillfully? If you choose to stay in a relationship, how can you do that skillfully without it really hurting you?
Exactly. You know,
yes, and it's even, I mean, there's, for the age group that you're mentioning, I mean, it's even more complicated. I have girlfriends in that age group who are just getting slaughtered on online dating because they don't know that exclusivity is a question. I mean, it's not a given now. Like, they don't know these things, right? Like, Bede, you do a lot of sexual health education. I mean, I actually am asking my girlfriends, you know about condoms, right? I mean, they've been in 25-year marriages,
right?
Like, you here's your power. Let's go through this. Let's do the needs assessment. I know me and Joanne always do it with each other when we're solving problems. I mean, you need these skills. Can I just say one quick thing?
Absolutely.
I just want to make one more point.
Of course.
I was teaching at the BC Counselors just, I think, last month or a couple months ago. And I brought a bunch of questions, some of them to ask them, from the Harvard Making Care Common project. And this was posed, this little scenario. I love using scenarios to draw people in.
Mm-hmm.
As a girl walks by their table, one of the boys says they hit that last week, right? One of the other boys mentions they just broke up with their girlfriend and don't want to go to the party because he might see her with other guys. Hit on all their friends, one friend advises. A couple of them are total sluts. A high school teacher overheard this and didn't know what to say. So what I posed the question, what would you tell the girl, right? Like, what would you say to the boy? Or what would you say to the girl? And everybody was just sitting there and they weren't sure. And my point is always, when you know what the skills and the needs are, you can look to the girl and you can ask her, like, look back. That's your care need, right? Think back to that sexual experience. That's what it felt like to be with someone who didn't care about you, right? Moving forward, do you want someone who cares about your feelings?
Right. And I call that lessons to be learned. What have we learned from the upset and exactly the, you know, the insight? You know, and I was thinking as you were, you know, talking, Casey, that, you know, a lot of women, you know, who are, you know, activists and feminists, and I mean, I hate labels, but I mean, I certainly see myself as a feminist. They have real problems with me when I talk about how important it is that we own our own ability to make the assessment, and that I've always felt that if we are going to wait, if we're talking about heterosexual couples, for men to change, if we're going to wait for anybody to change, we may wait a very, very long time, which is why we need to be in control. We need to be in control of ourselves, and just kind of going back to, you know, yours and Joanne's research, to really have the insight and to have the knowledge about what the ingredients actually are that go into healthy relationships. And I don't know what both of you have found, but I have found that people really don't know. They don't know what those ingredients are.
They don't.
Right.
They don't. They can describe the kind of relationship they want to have.
Right.
But they have no idea how to get them. And that's a basic premise that I always start out when I talk with people.
Right.
Like, do you know how to get these things? Who taught you? And people look at me sort of, you know, in a dumbfounded kind of way, like, huh, who taught me? No one taught me.
No one.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Totally.
Yeah.
No, for sure. And I think that this is why, and I know that we all agree, that we're always coming in on this after the fact. It's always crisis intervention, certainly, you know, in Joanne's, in my private practice world, and I suspect in yours as well. And this is where, you know, going back to the Montreal days, of the importance of preventative relationship education. You know, beginning as early as one can possibly begin.
Exactly.
Otherwise, we're late.
That's right.
Always, mm-hmm. always late. And as you said in your TED Talk, which I loved. I listened to it a second time yesterday, Joanne.
I love that one, too.
About how you end up in couples counseling, or you end up in premarital counseling after the decision has basically been made.
Right.
And it's too late.
Yep.
So what do we do to move our movement forward, ladies?
Yeah. Well, this is part of it. We need to keep getting the word out as best we can and, you know, educate people at any opportunity we can make. Casey's, you know, going to be working in Vancouver to try and make connections with the school districts there.
Great.
I've been focusing a lot on college-age students. And one of the things I've been thinking a lot about is how we can take the workshop material, the book material, perhaps develop it into an online program that people can more easily access and reach people
right.
in that way. And the other thing I'm thinking a lot about, and this is consistent with what we see in the mental health world these days, is to figure out what are really the key components? What are the kind of core messages? Can we scale it down rather than scale it up? Can we scale it down to some key ingredients that we can teach people that might have the potential to really make a difference if they just get that one or two ideas early on?
Exactly. You know, when we talk about, you know, the very specific key core ingredients that people need to know, when I wrote the book, I mean, I had done research with 450 people in the Boston, Connecticut, and Providence area, and I devised this formula, and I'm a very bottom line person. I have no patience for psychobabble. I have no patience for a lot of things. So I'm very, very bottom line, and I wanted something that people actually carry around. So my formula, it's kind of like having me in your purse doing a heavy duty, although we don't want it to come across like that because you don't want to put anybody on trial. You don't want them to feel intimidated. Doing a really heavy duty diagnostic assessment.
Right.
That's it. And it's everything that you and I and you also, Casey, will do in our practices. And so that it's very specific. It's very, very specific. And I was very upset when I discovered that it would take about a year to find out who somebody was and wasn't, because in my personal life, I'm probably one of the most impatient people you're ever going to want to meet, not professionally, but personally. And before the research, I would meet somebody and I'd say, I met this terrific woman, I met this terrific man. I mean, I would never, ever, ever make that kind of a statement today. What would I say, ladies? What would I say?
Well, you would take your time and get to know that person, that's for sure.
Right. I would say that is absolutely true. I would say I met somebody who appears to be great and wonderful and trustworthy yep. and respectful and educated, and that he is or she is who they said they were. And then I'm going to know who they are in about a year.
That's exactly right.
And when those red flags, because, you know, I wanted something really concrete like you two do and did. That people really need to look at those red flags, and that may mean extricating the relationship within a week or two.
That's exactly right.
You see, this is the thing.
And we have been accused of being very sort of unromantic and sort of cold, because we agree with these ideas that, like, you need to pull your emotions out a little bit so you can look clearly at what's happening.
Unfortunately, that's true. Well, it's true.
But you know what I've noticed with the younger people, and I think we have to say this more and more, is they've kind of done a couple shifts there. They, instead of like immediate falling in love, they've kind of done their own little shift to I'm falling in love. Like, it's not yet love. Like, I think we have to grab things from popular culture that are happening that are actually taking that abstract idea of slowing down and putting it more into practice, like
yes.
head and heart, right? Head and heart, you know, it's a balance, mutuality, right? I love mutuality because it's, you know, it's all about balance, right? So head and heart, those types of things.
Well, you know, yesterday, and I'm going to, of course, change details, I saw a couple. I saw the couple for 4 hours. I tend to do very long sessions. And communication skills failed. Problem-solving skills failed. Sex failed. And yet they are planning, despite what I had to say yesterday, to move forward and get married. And, you know, before they were leaving, I said, look, you know, I really care about both of you. And you really have to understand that love is not enough.
That's right.
And yes, exactly. Bottom line.
That's right.
Well, listen, Casey, it was lovely speaking with you. And let's continue to connect.
Oh, my goodness. Felt like 5 minutes.
Well, that's a good thing. You were a great guest. You were a great guest. So we'll continue to connect. And I want to thank you so much for being with us. It's 3 hours earlier in Vancouver. And
thank you.
So take good care, and we'll talk soon.
You too.
And
thank you so much.
You're so welcome. And Dr. Joanne Davila, The Thinking Girl's Guide to the Right Guy, How Knowing Yourself Can Help You Navigate Dating, Hookups, and Love. Where can people buy the book?
On Amazon. It's very easy to get. It's not very expensive.
Terrific. And if people want to contact you directly, they can contact you through Stony Brook.
Through Stony Brook University, yes. Uh-huh. You can Google me at Stony Brook University.
Good. So did you have fun? Was this
Absolutely.
Good?
Absolutely. This was great. Thank you so much.
You are so welcome. And you were saying this was the first time that you were actually in the studio.
Yeah.
Because you usually do it over the phone,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
Right. Well, everybody, I can hardly believe, just like Casey said, that an hour has come and gone yet again on the Ask Beattie Show. And I want to thank you all so much for listening, for going to the Ask Beattie archives here on the Progressive Radio Network, for emailing, for texting, for also leaving messages on the voicemail. So you can leave messages, and the message number happens to be 862-800-6805. And I'm going to leave you all on this wonderful Martin Luther King Day birthday with my two weekly messages. And the first message is that I want you to be committed, and I want you to be serious to do whatever it is that you need to do to really love yourself and do what is in your best interest. And the second message, of course, is that we all in this world and around the world, we need to do a much, much, much better job